everybody. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Mentor Moment episode with me, Gary Fox. Mentor Moments are key insights and lessons from our most popular episodes over the last couple of years. Today, it's one of the most popular episodes we've ever had with Killian Barry, the founder of Sportcaller, which was sold to Bally's during lockdown for over 40 million euro. In it, we talk about what it means to have enough. How do you know when it's time to cash out, hit the button, and get out of there? It's a beautiful 10-12 minutes where we discuss how Killian knew it was time to sell the company and what that meant to him, his family, and the people around him. This really gets referenced a lot to me when people talk to me about the podcast. It's probably one of the most impactful 10 minutes we've ever done. I hope you enjoy it. It also comes with some incredible movie quotes that you will never see on the top five entrepreneur movies to watch. So it's a gem of 10-12 minutes. I hope you do enjoy it. I'll see you back here next Monday for the Idea Lab. In the meantime, enjoy this Mentor Moments with Killian Barry. Before we kick into today's Mentor Moment, thanks as always to my partner Sage. Sage is the number one provider of payroll, accounting, HR solutions to small and medium-sized enterprises just like me and you all across the world. To find out more about how Sage can help you get prepared for self-assessment and payroll year-end, click the link in the podcast description. Now on with today's episode.
So then there's another film line that I quite liked. When I see £1 million in the bank, that was one target, you know, to get to and feel like, okay, well, at least that's a cut. Okay.
That's why I asked you, because yeah, and there's that something is it. Symbolic.
And that made me think of the film Babe, where he goes, that's enough, pig. You know, that's enough, pig. And there is just something in that bit where, you know, you're almost being told you can breathe again.
Yeah.
You know, you can just, you know, just relax a bit, you know. But it's sometimes in that moment as well, like I was, even then, I think, and I'm not actually, funny enough, I'm not that big a sports fan, even though I've got a sports business, and still have learned nothing about sport or sports betting or software. Or
that's fascinating.
I haven't learned anything. I've learned how to put together a brilliant team of people.
So you're a businessman as opposed to a sports fan.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not even sure I'm a businessman. I don't. That relief was also coupled with that idea in terms of sports analogy, in terms of if you look at, let's say, the Irish rugby team's performance in 2018. And there's some stuff from rugby I kind of take an interest in terms of they talk about the process. And if you're doing the daily process, the longer term goal will look after itself. And I do think there is something in that without Definitely. Getting into sports psychology. Yeah. I think I try to work that a little bit. And so far as if you're putting the foundations in place and you're putting solid, processes in place, and if you follow them and you don't think too much about the medium and long term, that those bits will work for you. But and that gets you, you know, a record breaking year in 2018 for the Irish rugby team. You beat the All Blacks and you win the Grand Slam, and you're at the very top of the world game, you know. And there's an inevitable decline after that, because a team can't keep hearing the same voice or being told the same message. And so you're forced to go through what they call a kind of a rebuilding process. And rebuilding processes don't come with any guarantees. And if you want to go from being, a company, a nice little company like ours was, with, you know, 4 million turnover and 2 million profit, like, you know, 10 staff in Dublin, 40 developers in Kiev, you know, all very nicely put together. But if you want to go to a business that's then X10 of that over 3 years, that's another rebuilding. You need another whole different structure. You need to put different rules and processes in place, and you need to prepare for that. And there's no guarantees that that's going to be achieved, you know? And so that takes a leap of faith. And so that, I wasn't sure that I was the right person to deliver that business, if I was being honest with myself. Like at the beginning, I never thought I wanted a very big team. I never wanted to count our success on money raised or number of staff we had or number of offices we had. So I wasn't convinced that I was the person to bring the business to the next stage. But I was also conscious that you're only that idea of 3 phone calls away from, you know, an existential disaster, basically, you know. And like, there was one time on the business we had a security, this is 2 years, 2 or 3 years ago, a security issue. We lost a client, and then I was going to get my bike from the bike shed under the office, and I cracked my head on the top of the gate or something, you know. And it was the third, and I was like, oh, of course I cracked my head on the top of the gate, you know, and that one day, of course that was going to happen, you know. And I only, once I got into town, realized, like, I went into a shop and my head is leaking or something, you know, like, and you're just looking at, and And there are those, you know, you're never safe in those businesses. You know, if you get three bad phone calls, if you have a security breach or something reputationally very damaging, and you can wake up to a whole new reality.
I think especially when you're dealing with other people as well, when you're providing a service to someone else, it's their reputation on the line. I think that's nearly harder.
Yeah. So we're working with FanDuel in the US, for instance, and, you know, you've got to deliver at a high standard when you're working with these people, you know, and if you lose one trophy client like that because of a reputational issue, you've got a problem.
Social proof is huge.
And I never felt comfortable in that regard. As much as it was nice to see the, you know, profit at the end of the year and money in the bank. And you could see that, you know, you could feel it running, you know, it was running well, like a good, you know, it really felt like this is going well. But at the same time as something's going well, it's only a small step from a not going well.
You know? I find that fascinating because we all as entrepreneurs are always like searching for that magic moment. Oh, it's all the music plays, the light comes up behind you and you're like, oh, this is the moment. Mm. This is what I've been waiting for. Yeah, life is great.
Yeah.
But it's funny to hear you chart the journey in stages as well. And to find that you constantly learn and, oh, you open the new door. Oh, it's a whole new challenge in here. Yeah, it's interesting to hear, like, with 2 million in the bank, 4 million in turnover, you were still worried.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yeah. Like last year, we had a brilliant year, you know, and that was even with COVID. Like our Q2 disappeared last year and we still had a good year. So like, you know, we had, what did we add? We had 1.6 million quid in the bank. We had 2 million profit last year and we had 4 million turnover and we had, you know, the best clients in the business. We were considered the market leader in a small but growing space of free to play. You had the US opening up in front of us. We had the corporate advisor we spoke to, you know, at the outset of all this and of the sales process. He thought we should wait another 12 to 18 months. You know, instead of being at 2 million, get to that 3 million EBITDA profit level that we predicted for this year, get to that and then begin a process. But again, I kind of thought of, you know, babe, and that's enough, pig, you know, like, what do you need? Like, what more do you need? Like, why do you need to be another, you know, step up and another bit bigger? Like, what, you know?
Had you a figure in your head? Because I went for a pint with a mate of mine and we're chatting away and 3 or 4 pints in, he goes, what's your number? I was like, sorry, what? What's your number? No one had ever asked me that before.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean, what's my number? He goes, what's your number? What's the number you're working towards? I was like, I've no idea.
Yeah.
And I've thought about that conversation multiple times. He told me his, and it was very distinct, and he'd broken it down how he got to that number. And I was like,
what age was he? You're like 20s, 30s?
30. I'm trying to put an age on him. 34. 35, very successful dude.
Yeah, because it's different for everyone.
And I was so fascinated because no one had, and I've talked to so many entrepreneurs, no one had ever said that to me. And I was like, wow. And I've thought about it a lot since. And we had that chat actually last weekend. And I was like, I've thought about that time so many times. Did you have a number in your head?
Not to dodge that question. There's two parts to it. One, the one thing I did want to do that an exit offered was an end to the story. And I really did want to find an end to the story and to feel like, you know, we've done that and that's some achievement. You know, you've got a publicly listed company in the US that has looked at that and thinks that's, you know, good enough. And all we ever wanted to be was good enough. You know, that someone on the outside would look at it and they'd say, yeah, that's pretty decent, actually. That's a well put together business with good clients, with good team, with good technology. I did want that validation in some way. And so that has given me a quiet satisfaction. There's no doubt about that. Then you look at it in terms of the financial side and what's their number. And there was always a number in my mind. It tends to creep up a little bit as well.
That's human nature.
Yeah. So I remember Maples, Colm Rafferty and Maples, who a lot of your listeners will know, and a lot of the technology entrepreneurs and industry people will know in Ireland and elsewhere. So he was a big believer as a lawyer in this space and Ireland's ability to lead in this space from the beginning. And he was involved in Spark of Genius and Web Summit and things like that from the start. And it's only now he's beginning to see the fruition of that success, having worked with Box Ever and others recently. He's a busy man, you know, and the market is booming. It's an amazing success story. And so I remember going to an event they organized. It was a good few years ago, and it was one guy, and they were younger. I was always a bit old for this guy, you know, and so I didn't go to too many of these events, and the networking things I tended to avoid and so on. And
it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wasn't, you know,
I could sit here and chat to you all day.
Yeah.
But bring me in a room with, I would literally be, I wouldn't even say a word.
I couldn't have.
I'd be in the corner.
I know. Yeah. And but this was a really nice put together event, that Maples ran, and I got chatting to a guy, and he had a business, and he was talking about what that number was. And I was surprised how high it was. I think he put a number. He was only in his 20s, though, and he probably liked fast cars, and he had an expensive lifestyle and all these things. And he'd watch these TV shows. And he said 16 million, 1.6 million wow. was the number.
For him personally,
and
or
I
the company.
And I kind of turned to someone. I said, is that, that can't, that's too much. You're like, yeah. Like, if you do the sums, if you need, you know, to live on 10 grand a month, you know, per year, that's a net income of this. If you multiply that out over by X number of years, you just don't get, you know. But I think he wasn't thinking of, you know, there's a certain point in an age you get to where, you know, thankfully we were able to buy a house last year after renting for years. So we bought the house last year because the business was going well. And that was incredibly pleasant step for us. And it had taken us a long time to get to that point. And we took huge satisfaction from that. We had three brilliant children who were all well and healthy in a brilliant national school system in Ireland. And, you know, a bike that works, and for personally, the best car is the car that's actually working, because we had lots of cars that didn't work over the years.
That's kind of my view.
So there's
as
a
well.
Certain point of like, well, what do you need? Like, whether it's lockdown or not lockdown, like, it's nice to go and stay in a nice hotel or to be able to, you know, treat yourself sometimes. But I just couldn't see where he was getting that kind of number in the mix. So I did, the deal meant I did better than I ever hoped or expected. And it was, lockdown is probably a good time for that to happen because there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. We chatted about this on the phone last week. I was like, what do you do when you sell your company during lockdown?
Yeah. Well, myself and Maeve, it was a Friday night. It was brilliant. The sales process, we began working with Oakvale, Sanford and his team in Oakvale, who are a London specialist M&A group for the gaming industry, who had known Sanford for a few years. And, we started working with them probably in September. And then we have lots of management presentations to his long list of maybe 20 interested companies. So we've got in this room actually, presenting to them, and it was lockdown and we couldn't travel to them, which was kind of handier. And then December, we had letters of interest from four companies, and we chose one of those. And so the lawyers only began talking to each other at the beginning of January once they came back after the new year. And we'd set an exclusivity date of the 5th of February, which our lawyers told us was very unlikely. It was more likely to be the end of February. But we hit it, and because we were determined to hit it. And we've got, when we set deadlines, we tend to meet them. And we've got people on the team who ran the data room and ran the due diligence, and were just incredibly efficient. And the buyer's side has promised a gentlemanly process, and their lawyers promised a gentlemanly process. And I'm very, very happy to say they actually were good to their word on that. So it was a really pleasant experience. And we got to the February the 5th. So myself and May were sitting at home. The US, our lawyers are on US time. And so we're having some food, and we'd got an extra nice bottle of wine, and we got a confirmation that evening that it had gone through. And it was just such a nice feeling, to be honest. And it was just a nice quiet weekend. And then I went for a walk. I broke lockdown, went for a walk up in Glendalough with a friend, up over that loop walk, which was about as big a treat as you could get.
With a
nice sandwich and a bag of Kyo's crisps or something, you know.
Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Killian. It's one of the most beautiful 10, 12 minutes we've had on the podcast in the last couple of years. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have. I've listened back to this episode multiple times already. I'll see you back here in a couple of days. Thanks for listening. And wherever you are listening, whether it's Spotify, Apple, or YouTube, hit subscribe. It really helps the podcast grow. I'll see you soon.